Good afternoon, and welcome to the Senate Committee on Commerce and Workforce Development for Wednesday, April 8th. We have two bills, and we're going to take up first, we're going to open as a subcommittee to take testimony on Senate Bill 805. We just have a couple of people signed up for that one. So I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 805, and I'm going to call Brigadier General Mike Caldwell and J.L. Wilson, and Paul Evans is here too. And then I also see that Gretchen Peterson signed up on this bill. Gretchen, are you here? And I think you met the other bill. So, okay, so we have our panel. And Jeremy, please tell us about this bill.
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 805 requires an employer during a period of military conflict to provide up to 15 days of unpaid leave to an employee who is the spouse of a member of the armed forces, the National Guard, or military reserve prior to the member being deployed or redeployed to active duty. Makes failure to grant leave or discrimination against a spouse unlawful employment practice, requires the Bureau of Labor and Industries to enforce provisions of the Act, and it declares an emergency effective on passage. There's no revenue impact, and we do not have a fiscal on the bill.
Okay. Thank you for that explanation, and good afternoon. And before you go ahead, I just want to mention to the audience that if you have a personal device or a cell phone, please turn those off because they do interfere with our recording equipment. So, welcome, good afternoon, and please go ahead.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director at the Oregon Military Department. We are here today to testify in support of this concept and this bill. I think, as you know, and most people do know, we're on the cusp of deploying roughly 3,000 Oregonians, Oregon men and women of the Oregon National Guard and 41st Brigade Combat Team to Iraq. Presently, they are in California, and they're training to get ready for this deployment. And to give a good example of where I think this would be an excellent opportunity, we've scheduled into the training. They do 2 weeks. It's basically a three-week running annual training period, which means they're not on federal active duty yet. They're getting ready to go on federal active duty. They'll be released and have 4 to 5 days, depending on what group they went to California in, and then they deploy to Fort Stewart, Georgia. Now, they won't return to Oregon for a year. Unless they get an R&R leave somewhere in between that. The opportunities, obviously, the 4 or 5 days that they have in between this one bit of training and then the actual deployment is really essential, I think, for tying up loose ends with family and other issues. I think anything we can do to try to make that period of time less onerous on the individual, I think the better off we are. I will tell you this. Our employers in the state of Oregon have been extremely generous and extremely good at working with our families and our soldiers. We have a very, very small, minute issue or problems out there. They're just one in very few. So I think as a general rule, this is probably not going to be too onerous on anybody because they're already doing it. To be real candid with you, the biggest issues we have are with government employers, not with private employers. So they seem to take a different tact at all of this business, which is kind of surprising to me, but that is the reality. And not so much state government, but subdivisions of the state, that special districts, et cetera. So from a private employer standpoint, I would tell you that I have not heard of an incident where that private employer didn't do everything they could to take care of those families and those soldiers when they were gone. And the only ones that I've dealt with, and that's been several of them, have been public employment. So the bill, I think, is a good public policy statement of the state, particularly as we see this group moving out and going off to support the President of the United States and the efforts in the Congress. So thank you very much, and if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer.
Thank you for your testimony. I think we'll hold questions till we've heard from this entire panel, and please go ahead.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, my name is Paul Evans. I'm a policy advisor to Governor Kulongoski for Military and Veterans Affairs. I was also the chair of the Governor's Task Force on Veteran Services that finished its work in December and submitted 39 recommendations for your review. This bill was not in the first group of bills because we kind of had a limited number of bills we could put forward, but it is clearly consistent with what we believe to be an essential aspect of supporting military families. I don't want to be too dramatic in this case, but the mission that the 3,000 members are about to depart on is a very significant mission. It's at a very critical time in the history of Iraq and the United States, and for some of these families, the time that they have with their military member may in fact be the last time they have with their military member. As a veteran of both Iraq and Afghanistan, I can tell you personally that those hours are worth gold. Anything we can do to help make sure that families, especially families that have gone through one or two or three previous deployments, anything we can do to make that happen is something that I think is a moral imperative. My father's a small business person. I understand the impact on business. I also understand that Oregonians are coming together to support this mobilization as they have for the last 4 years. And I think that ultimately it sends a clear signal, as the general commented, to codify what really in most cases is already being done and what is the right thing to do. So thank you for the opportunity to present.
Thank you for your comments.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, for the record, J.L. Wilson, representing Associated Oregon Industries. Typically, we're not supportive of bills that expand family leave opportunities, but we can certainly get to yes on this bill. There's a real sensitivity to veterans. Most of our employers are veterans, have family members who are veterans in the armed services. It is a issue that's held dear to most of our members' hearts. Our only ask on this bill is that it's not very clear if this is folded into current family leave statutes or not. As you know, House Bill 2744 is being addressed on the House side. We asked for amendments, and the committee on the House side is receptive to of those, and as is the sponsor, that would make clear that that this time is folded into current family leave statute in terms of definitions of employer, definitions of employee, and an understanding that the time taken off here is would count as OFLA time under Oregon's current law. That is being addressed on the House side. If those concerns are addressed, then we see fit to say okay with the bill.
Great, and that was my interpretation when I looked at this, so it sounds like that those amendments are consistent with what I thought the bill said already.
Okay.
So, thank you. Any questions? Okay, and we do have one more witness on this bill, and I believe that's Commissioner Brad Avakian. Someone else from the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Looks like Bob Estabrook. Please come forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the confusion of me with the Commissioner. It's a great honor to me. I just wanted to, for the record, Bob Estabrook, Bureau of Labor and Industries. The Bureau is supportive of Senate Bill 805, thinks that it's very consistent with the sort of law that we enforce in terms of family leave, and also we're the enforcement agency for the veterans' preference in public employment, so this seems to be very consistent with the sort of work that we're engaging in now, and we would be very happy to have this added to our umbrella of service that we provide to the citizens of Oregon. And I'm happy to take any questions. You have written testimony from us.
Thank you for your comments. Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much for being here. And with no one further signed up to testify on this bill, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 805 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 966. And we have many people who have come to testify on this bill, and so we're going to take as many of you as possible. We are going to start with a panel that includes Commissioner Brad Avakian, Senator Alan Bates, Representative Ben Cannon, and Representative Michael Dembro. We may need to pull up an extra chair there, and if you could all four come forward, and in whatever order you've decided to testify, we're ready to hear from you. And Jeremy, please just briefly explain this bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 966 creates Family Leave Benefits Insurance Program to provide benefits to employees taking family leave to care for an infant or newly adopted child newly placed foster child under 18 years of age, adopted or foster child older than 18 years of age if the child is incapable of self-care because of a mental or physical disability, or a family member with a serious health condition. It establishes family leave benefits insurance account in the state treasury. It requires employers to pay premiums withheld from employees' earnings into the account. It applies to employers with 25 or more employees. It permits non-subject employers to opt in commencing July 1st, 2013. Requires reports and payments to Department of Revenue under existing statute. It continuously appropriates monies in family leave benefits insurance account to Bureau of Labor and Industries and requires BOLI to administer claims for benefits. It establishes qualifications for receiving benefits. It establishes amounts of and limitations on benefits. It allows employees to first file claims on or after January 1st, 2012, and requires BOLI to notify the employer of a claim within 5 business days. Finally, the bill creates unlawful employment practice for discrimination under the Act. It includes a civil penalties provision, and it establishes personal liability for certain individuals upon employer default. It declares an emergency, and it's effective on passage. The bill has no revenue impact, and there's no fiscal report issued.
Okay, thank you for that explanation. Please go ahead.
Madam Chair, committee members, I'm Brad Avakian, State Labor Commissioner. I appreciate you taking up this cause once again for working Oregonians. As State Labor Commissioner, I lead Oregon's Bureau of Labor and Industries. This is the bureau, if this bill passes, that will implement the Act and also administer the accompanying fund. I would like to make two comments related to the bill, one to the merits of the bill, one to the financial viability of the program as we see it. But as a preface to that, you should know that the Bureau of Labor currently enforces and administers Oregon's Family Leave Act. We actually receive more calls and process more claims on family leave than any other area of employment law in the state of Oregon, which to us is indicative of the need for the bill that you have before you today as well. The difficulty, though, that we see is that even though we have many workers that take advantage of Oregon's Family Leave Act, that most of the time when they do, it's because their family is in some type of crisis, be it long-term or short-term. And the difficulty that we have is many of those people have to take it, of course, without pay, which simply adds to the crisis their family is experiencing. And so the bill before you today is a very important step in alleviating that harm that folks are currently suffering. So with regard to the merits, it's a necessary bill, and it's a bill that I fully support and that the Bureau of Labor is ready to implement upon its passage. We have, in preparation for passage of the bill, have looked at other states, what their experience has been both in considering and in administering similar programs, as well as other information, and have concluded that based on that and what we anticipate happening in the state of Oregon, that there's no question that the bill will be financially viable in the future. Many factors have to be considered when we're talking about viability. It includes the health of Oregon's businesses. It includes job creation and expansion in the state, the number of people that will be making claims, not just in the short term, but in the long term. The costs will, of course, be paid for up front on the program. So when we talk about viability, we're looking a decade down the road, anticipating what claims may look like then. When we do, and compare that to what's occurred in other states, there is no question in our mind that this program will be financially viable and that our Bureau will be able to administer the program successfully. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Alan Bates, a state senator and a physician in Southern Oregon. I'm going to try to put a personal face on this bill, because that's what got me involved with the bill and why I think it's a good bill and should pass. You're going to hear about where the cost comes from, and it's funded by employees, and you've already heard from the good labor commissioner. But I'm going to try to put a personal face on this. I've been at this for 31 years in private practice, and chronically and repetitively see a situation in which a family member falls sick and somebody has to take care of them, whether it's a child, whether it's a mother or a father. And for the most part, now I'm going to try not to be too prejudiced here, for the most part, it's a woman who takes care of these issues. And this bill is, from my mind, primarily about women in the workforce taking care of both their mothers and fathers, grandparents, and their own children. About probably once a week in my practice, I run into this issue. The Family Leave Act we have now is usually utilized by people who are ill themselves and have to take time off work because of a chronic illness. But this is a step past that. And the thing that really blocks people from doing what they need to do or doing it in a way that's reasonable for them is that it's unpaid leave, or they're jeopardizing losing their job. I'm especially noted when I was delivering a lot of babies up to 10 years ago. I delivered over 3,000 children in Southern Oregon. We commonly would see this. If you're on the Oregon Health Plan, those ladies were able to take 3 months off, recover from the pregnancy, take care of their babies. If their woman was in a position where she could afford to leave the workforce indefinitely, which a few did, not many, then she'd be home. But the working mother, the one in between there, the one who paid all these taxes, the one who has to work, would often have their baby on a Friday or Saturday, and by the middle of the next week try to go back to work. No sleep at night, taking care of a new baby, still recovering from the delivery itself, and really struggling for 6, 8, 10, 12 weeks to get back on her feet and be successful in the workplace, be successful as a mother. This needs to change. It's been needed to change for a long time. And the burden on these women, and occasionally men, but the burden on these women primarily is really unbearable. Sooner or later, they crack. And it leads to all kinds of issues inside their family and for them. This is a very simple way of giving an opportunity to take care of the newborn child, take care of a sick child, take care of an elder in their family in a way that's reasonable. It does not get them their full wages back. We understand that. But it gives them enough money that they can afford to do this and not put themselves in financial jeopardy, especially in these economic times becoming more severe. Everyone's worried about losing their job. They don't want to be in jeopardy losing a job, but they want to be able to take some time off to help a family member if they have to. For those reasons, I really support this bill. I'm sorry we didn't get through the last session. I'm looking forward to seeing it come through this time and come through with a strong vote. So thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Ben Cannon, State Representative, House District 46 in Portland. This bill recalls for me the ultimate irony I faced in the last session, which was 3 days after the birth of my daughter on June 13, 2007. I sat on the House floor a row in front of the chair as she carried this bill related to family leave for new parents, among others, and I sat there going, oh gosh, there's nowhere I'd rather be than both these places, at home with my daughter, but also voting to support this bill. A few words, just this bill builds on Oregon's heritage as a leader in family leave. Oregon had the nation's first parental and family leave laws, and now is the time to update those for the benefit of employees, employers, and families. I'm going to spend just a couple of minutes talking about the process that got us to this point, a process very much led by the chair of your committee, and to which we owe her real gratitude. Over the last 2 years, she, along with other members of the legislature, agencies, and advocates, worked to craft a family leave insurance proposal that is simple, that is streamlined, and that is sustainable. And I'll talk about each of those. First of all, simplicity. So from the point of view of the employer, to know whether you are required to participate in this program, you use the same test that you currently use to know whether you are required to participate in the family leave program. So an employer who's required to provide family leave is required to participate in this program. The same tests apply. It's not a separate determination. Likewise, whether an employee is eligible for the benefit of this program matches their eligibility for the existing family leave law. This applies to the same people with a slight difference that I think some others may speak to. Let me talk to the streamlined aspect of this program. For employers, this payroll deduction that funds the program would be administered through the quarterly combined payroll reporting forms that they currently already complete. One report, one check. That's one that they're doing already. This adds a line, but not an additional report, not an additional check, no new paperwork. Streamlined for agencies. It uses existing databases to maintain the records associated with this program. Not big new IT, not big new database, not a whole set of new records. It's been hard work. Again, gratitude to the chair for pulling together agencies to figure out how to make this work in a way that doesn't require redundancy. Finally, sustainability, and Commissioner Avakian have touched on this, but this program has been developed with experts in and outside of state government that have estimated usage so that we know with a high level of confidence that this program would be predictable and sustainable over time, that the funding would be there. There are mechanisms in the bill to assure that BOLI maintains a fund balance at least 1 year of costs. The good news for me personally last time around, 2007, was that the session adjourned a day or two early. As a teacher, I had the summer to bond with my baby daughter. Passage of this bill would not make that possible for everyone, nor would everyone who qualifies for this even necessarily want to take advantage of it, but it would be an important step forward in helping working families, opening up that door of possibility to a few people who don't qualify for it or are not able to take advantage of it now. I appreciate the chance to testify on it today. Thanks.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senate colleagues. I'm Michael Dembro, the representative for House District 45, which is in Northeast Portland, Park Rose. And I'm going to be talking about the positive impacts of this bill on employees and employers. But before I do that, like Senator Bates, I want to say something from a personal perspective. Like many people in this room, I'm a sandwich person. I live in the middle of an intergenerational sandwich. My wife and I have two children. We have two grandchildren. I have a mother-in-law, father-in-law, a mother. And my mother lives on the other side of the country. She's been able to stay in her home thanks to a program they have there that's kind of like our Oregon Project Independence. And I have to say I have real mixed feelings about it because I'd like her to move out here. But she refuses to, and I know it would really be bad for her to do that. So she has a very active life on the East Coast. However, starting about 5 or 6 years ago, she started developing some mobility problems having to do with her hip, and her doctor and her friends urged her to have hip replacement surgery, which she resisted. She was very nervous about it, and she was really concerned about, you know, what would happen when she went home, just sort of that transition. And so I told her that I would come out and spend some time as she was moving from the rehab center back to the house. And I was able to do that. I was able to take about 10 days off and help her. And she had a really good recovery. She walks all over the place now. I'm sure that last night she was jumping up and down as the University of Connecticut women won the national championship. She's become a real basketball fan. She was able to do that because I was fortunate. I was able to go out there and not lose income, and that's a function of the employment that I have. But I know that most workers are not so fortunate. Right now, most workers are forced to choose between their loved ones and a paycheck. And it's an impossible choice. And it's something I see a lot in the workplace. You know, along with my background as a college teacher, I've done a lot of work with labor relations and efforts to improve workplace morale and effectiveness. And we all know that workers who are distracted by worry about their loved ones are not good workers. I can't tell you how often I've seen an otherwise exemplary employee see their job performance start to slip, and when we would dig a little deeper, realize that the problem is that something was going on with a family member. And honestly, when workers are in that situation, it's really better for them, it's better for their employers, and it's better for their colleagues for them to be caring for the loved ones rather than to be at work. Senate Bill 966 creates an insurance program that will make that possible for them. Family leave insurance will alleviate the negative pressure by providing a way for them to do both. And I want to stress, as Representative Cannon said, that family medical leave insurance works within the existing medical leave system. There are no family leave expansions in this bill. Family leave insurance does not require an employer to provide leave that is not already required of them under Oregon and federal law. Family leave insurance uses the same qualifications for leave as current law does. That is, the employer, it's a larger size employer, 25 plus employees. The employee has worked for that employer for 180 days at an average of more than 25 hours per week. They must provide notice to their employer that they're going to be taking leave. And the employer can challenge an employee's eligibility. It's all exactly the same as current law. No new regulations or timeframes for an employer to have to wrap their head around. In addition, there are additional safeguards for employers. An employee will need to submit medical proof to the Bureau. Intermittent leave will not be permitted under family leave insurance. The leave has to occur in 1 week or more. It can't be scattered a day here, a day there. Employees will receive harsh punishments for fraud and abuse, including financial penalties and a two-year disqualification for family leave insurance. The insurance program, as Representative Cannon said, would not cost employers anything. The reporting is within the current system, and the assessment is on the employee. But the benefits to business are clear. A New Jersey study found that employers would benefit from paid family leave by increasing employee retention and decreasing costly employee turnover. Many employees, when faced with that impossible decision of family or job, have to leave the job and not come back, and they have to be replaced. Studies show that 98% of employees return to work for the same employer after taking their longest family medical leave. Businesses also profit from higher productivity, greater morale, and reduced unplanned absenteeism. And in addition, businesses that are small, that have fewer than 25 employees, can voluntarily opt in to this system. And this becomes then a very valuable benefit to lure workers into their firms. Just like to say finally that we in this country like to think of ourselves as family focused, the family at the heart of community. Family leave insurance will provide solid support for our families and our communities. It's good for employers, it's good for employees, and I urge you to support it. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Do we have any questions for our panel of elected officials? Okay, thank you all for being here, and I think it is very interesting that we had a panel of four men.
I know!
Great. We had actually intended to alternate back and forth between supporters and opponents, but so far we only have one person who signed up to testify against the bill unless there is another sign-up sheet, and it looks like there is. So let's stick to that plan and call J.L. Wilson and Jenna Kalvza and Janella Stone. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, I think I was looking at the no column for do you live more than 100 miles, but are you, so both of you are signed up to testify in opposition to the bill, and then it looks like we have also Christina Martin. So how about Christina, if you come forward as part of this panel, too? Okay, please go ahead.
Thank you. Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, for the record, my name is J.L. Wilson, representing Associated Oregon Industries. We do oppose Senate Bill 966. There is widespread opposition in the employer community for 966. And you may ask, why is that? Employers, there's no cash expenditure for employers. It's as previous testimony said, there's no outlay. The tax is on the employees. The first point I would consider is we actually care how the state conducts its business. If a private insurance company went into marketplace with the lack of planning that's been done on implementing a paid family leave insurance program, it just simply wouldn't happen. The state has a fiduciary responsibility to uphold. To date, we have not seen any professional actuarial work on this proposed program, no business plan, no analysis of expenses, either variable or fixed, no analysis of expected demand, no testing of assumptions, no plan for reserves, no planning on how to deal with the expected taxpayers when, in fact, there's no money left in the system other than to say, sorry, you've paid premiums into the system, but we don't have any money left. Presumably, BOLI will have to borrow money to initiate the program, which we don't think makes sense in this economic climate. The second issue is it is a tax on workers, and I think it's appropriate for us to dwell on that point for a second. You are taxing workers an additional $40 per year. By comparison, you know, a gas tax would cost Oregonians less per person than $40 per year, and there's widespread opposition to small taxes. $40 matters, especially in this economy, which is the worst in a generation. Every dollar counts, and so I don't think it's does anybody a service to gloss over the fact that this is a tax on employees. We don't believe a mandatory tax for a paid family leave program is actually fair to the majority of Oregon workers. For workers who anticipate taking leave, yeah, it is a great deal because the benefit is roughly 40 times what you pay in an annual premium. But for the vast majority of workers who don't take family leave, it's a raw deal. In rough numbers, it's based on the premise that you need premiums from about 40 workers to pay or subsidize for the leave of one worker. And there's no telling whether that worker needs cash assistance or financial assistance or not. In fact, you could get into a very regressive situation where you have 40 low-income workers who subsidize the leave of somebody who may not need that assistance, and that is something that I think needs to be highlighted. We don't believe ultimately that the program will be sustainable. Oregon's Family Leave Act was implemented in 1995. Since then, in 14 years, we've seen tremendous growth in the number of qualifying leaves. The Oregon Family Leave has expanded just, you know, the bill right before us. We talked about military members expanding. Last year, we talked about the addition of grandparents and grandchildren. We've talked about making workers comp leave divorced from family leave. We've expanded family leave a great deal over 14 years, and we have every expectation as employers that the same will happen for under a paid family leave system. For instance, I have no doubt that in a couple of years we will come to the understanding that $300 weekly benefit is probably not enough. We could probably come to the understanding that instead of just caring for a family member, that this leave now needs to be for folks who need to care for grandparents, grandchildren, perhaps returning members of the military. In other words, expanded beyond its original scope. And that doesn't even take into effect the increased demand that I expect that this program will generate. All of which says, what do we do with a funding mechanism that is simply 2 cents per hour? Do we really think it can work under that mechanism? And that really gets to the heart of employer concerns over this bill. We've given our experience with the expansion of the Family Leave Act and how we think that this will follow suit. I think we have every reason to believe there won't be adequate funding to fund this over the long term. And in which case, you're talking about either one of two choices, a tax on employees more than the 2 cents, or a payroll tax on employers, and I don't think either group would buy into that. I would also point to Washington states, our neighbors to the north, their experience with this program. They suspended the program effective late last year, I believe in September, because quite simply they're grappling on how to pay for it, the startup cost and how to initiate administration. Their costs are roughly about $26, $27 million for administration, which represented about 37% of total cost in the system. So their experience is 37% of costs will be overhead. What is our expectation that our program will be any different? I think that that needs to be laid out. And finally, I'll conclude with just saying, our family leave system in Oregon today is quite generous. An Oregon employee can take up to 36 weeks of leave today, and the employer is required to hold their job. And I think that that is appropriate. It serves a legitimate intent to protect people's jobs during life changes and difficult times, but burdening a majority of workers with additional taxes for family leave they won't take, we believe, is too extreme of an extension of that. And I'll wrap up my testimony with that.
Thank you for your comments. And whoever is next, go ahead.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jenna Kaluza, and I am the state director of NFIB here in Oregon. NFIB represents over 7,000 small businesses here in Oregon, and it's a national organization. My colleague, J.L. Wilson, here kind of laid out a lot of the same concerns that we have. I'm obviously here in opposition of Senate Bill 966. A few concerns that I wanted to point out that we have about the paid family leave insurance program. Senate Bill 966 would place an additional burden on small business employees. Senate Bill 966 would add a new administrative burden to small businesses and potentially create new costs and increase the cost of doing business here in Oregon. As my colleague also mentioned, this is exactly the wrong time to be doing this to small businesses here in Oregon. Implementing the paid family leave proposal now could have huge budget implications. Although proponents of the bill have increased the proposal from 1 cent to 2 cent tax from what it was last session, we still don't believe that this program is sustainable. We are also concerned with the lack of actuarial studies done on this bill. Without these studies, it's nearly impossible for us to know if this program will be able to sustain itself. We are Until these are completed, we aren't going to be able to know how many folks are going to be participating in the program and also how much money it's going to take in order to run it. We urge your opposition to Senate Bill 966.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, my name is Christina Martin. I'm here on behalf of Cascade Policy Institute, and I'd like to point out a few problems with this bill. I'll try not to repeat what's already just been said, but I think the most obvious thing is this is called the Family Leave Benefits Insurance Act, and I think calling it an insurance act is kind of a misnomer. Insurance is something that typically we think of, it's an agreement between an insured person who pays an insurance company, an insurer, a premium, right, for an insurance coverage to cover certain kinds of risks. Okay, so the premium depends on the amount of risk. So, for example, car insurance, a person who has a history of car accidents or who is in an age group that's more likely to get in a car accident is going to have to pay more for insurance coverage than for another individual. Now, this bill is not at all like that. Everybody would pay the same amount, essentially, 2 cents per hour. And so what would end up happening is single individuals would end up paying for couples to have children. People from small families would have to cover people from large families who are more likely to have somebody who's a family member who needs to be taken care of if they get sick. And so I think insurance is really a misnomer. It really is a tax. And I know $42 doesn't really sound like a lot when you're looking at a huge budget for all sorts of other things that, you know, the state of Oregon has to deal with. But I think for the majority of Oregonians, $42 is a lot. I know, speaking for myself, I have student loans, and that's 42 fewer dollars that I could spend on my student loans. And honestly, $42 for people who are going to use it, that's valuable to them. But for someone like me, it's not valuable. It's really just a waste of money for me. And so I would ask you to vote against this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, and I thank you all for being here today. Okay, next I'm going to call Mike Leachman, Vicki Lovell, and Tom Chamberlain. And Tom, I know you you may want to go first on this panel because I know you have another commitment. So if the three of you could come forward. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name's Tom Chamberlain. I'm president of the Oregon AFL-CIO, representing over 210,000 working families of Oregon, and father of three and grandfather of six. Strong families equate to strong communities. I've been very fortunate in my family that both my daughters have had time to spend those early weeks and months with their newborn children, and it makes a difference. And with family medical leave, it shouldn't be just for those folks who can afford to take the time off to be with their infants. It should be for everyone. And that's why the Oregon AFL-CIO strongly supports Senate Bill 966.
Thank you for your testimony. And whichever of you wants to go next, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. I'm Vicki Lovell. I'm representing the Institute for Women's Policy Research. And I hope I can shed some light on the questions that have been raised regarding likely use and impact of the Family Leave Benefits Insurance Act. The Institute for Women's Policy Research is a nonpartisan scientific research organization based in Washington, D.C. We have been working on the issues of looking at the impact of paid time off programs for more than 10 years and have provided input to congressional deliberations as well as to both state and local campaigns for paid family medical leave and paid sick days across the country, including a plan that was adopted in New Jersey and proposals that have been looked at in Illinois, Maine, Maryland, and New Mexico. I'd like to describe the kind of data that we use in our estimates before we talk about some of the findings so I can reassure you regarding the nature of the work that we have done on this bill. We use three primary sets of data in order to estimate which workers in Oregon would use the benefits provided by this program, which workers would alternatively use a program that might be more generous offered by their employer, and what the likely cost would be of this use. First, we use a survey that was conducted by the U.S. Department of Labor, a national representative survey of all workers that asked about workers' need to take a caregiving leave, whether they were able to take a caregiving leave that was covered by an employer paid leave policy, whether they were not able to take the leave at all because they couldn't afford the time off. And this allows us to estimate in Oregon how many workers are likely to use the program that's proposed in this bill. Then we use data also collected by the U.S. Department of Labor from the current population survey, which allows us to look specifically at Oregon, at the demographic makeup of the workforce, which helps us to estimate how many workers, for instance, would face a situation of having a newborn at home or have an ill family member they might need to care for. And then finally, we use data from the Oregon Employment Department in order to calibrate our findings to the current size of the covered labor force in Oregon. This is data as of February of 2009. We then use standard econometric methods in order to evaluate the probability of individual workers having a need for a leave, estimating how long a leave they would take and what their benefit receipt would be and the total benefits that they would receive. I know there's a lot of concern about the long-term sustainability of this program in Oregon. So in calculating our estimates, we geared our model toward a high-end estimate as opposed to a low-end estimate. In other words, where there are points in our model where an assumption could be made on a regarding a higher level of take-up or a lower level of take-up. We adjusted our model to have a higher level of take-up so that we're actually estimating what we think the program use would be when the program is in maturity, not in the first year of the program, but after many years of program implementation, when workers are familiar with the program, when employers are familiar with the program, and when we think that program participation would be its highest. So we're looking at the out-year implementation of the program. We estimate that at program maturity, a maximum of 4.2% of eligible Oregonians would take a leave under this bill in any given year, and that the cost and benefit payments would be $11.8 million per year for leave to care for newborns and $8.3 million per year to care for seriously ill family members, for a total of $20.1 million per year in the out years. The expected level of benefit payments would be much lower than this, as I indicated, in the early years of the program when workers are starting to become familiar with the program. And one reason why we think that the early year benefit payments would be much lower is looking at the experience in California, where a new paid family leave program was implemented in 2004. We have data that after 3 years of that program being in place, only 28% of surveyed adults were familiar with the program. It's very difficult to educate workers about the kinds of about a new program of this sort and let them know what the eligibility criteria are. So it takes it takes several years for that knowledge to build up in the workforce. So in California, where the program was added on to an existing well-known short-term disability insurance program, the new benefits, a lot of workers are still not aware of the new benefits. And finally, we believe that this kind of program could be administered very efficiently by a government program. If you look at the administrative costs of the short-term disability insurance program in California, the costs of administration are only 5.2% of the total cost of benefits paid out by that program. So it's a program that can be administered very effectively and very efficiently. There's a lot more detail in my written testimony regarding our estimations about lengths of leaves and that sort of thing, which I'd be happy to answer questions about.
Thank you for your comments, and we will read your written testimony. And please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. I'm Mike Leachman. I'm with the Oregon Center for Public Policy. And my primary task with you today is just to describe our estimate of the total amount that workers would pay into the family leave insurance program under SB 966. Obviously, determining this amount is a crucial step in establishing the sustainability of the insurance program. We stand ready, of course, to assist in the process of the state developing an official fiscal estimate on this, but we wanted to offer our own estimates at this point just to help inform the process. We estimate that under SB 966, insured workers would pay a total of $30.4 million a year, or about $60.8 million for the upcoming biennium. Our revenue estimate is based on Oregon Employment Department data. That's the most accurate data that we have available on Oregon employers and employees. The Employment Department has access to an extensive database of the actual Oregon workforce. And using that data, the department was able to estimate how many Oregon workers fit the criteria for paying premiums for family leave insurance under this bill. And with that data in hand, then it was an easy step to simply calculate the total amount of premiums that workers would pay. We just took the total number of hours worked by employees who would pay family leave insurance premiums using the Employment Department estimates and multiply that figure by 2 cents, the hourly premium under SB 966. Based on the projections by IWPR that Dr. Lovell just described, the cost for the cost of likely claims, the premium amount that I just described appears to be more than enough to cover the cost of claims, even assuming a program that's already at maturity. We undertook this analysis to inform the committee and the public about what we believe the amount of revenue would be, because we think that family leave insurance is good public policy. part of the reason that families today are often juggling work and family responsibilities, that families are doing that more often than in the past, is, of course, due to the rightful opening of more work opportunities for women, but financial necessity is also a cause. The typical man's wages in Oregon over the last 30 years have fallen by more than $3 an hour after adjusting for inflation. And as a result, more women need to be employed today for families to stay afloat. So today, more families are juggling work and family responsibility, and the workplace in Oregon hasn't caught up with those changing family dynamics. So an Oregon working mother who takes time off to care for her newborn usually does so without a paycheck. And the same goes for many workers who take time off to care for a sick child or parent. And their families are suffering as a result. So we believe that today's modern workforce requires more modern systems to meet the needs of working families and their employers, and the family leave insurance system established under SB 966 is a step in the right direction. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Okay, thank you both for being here. And I'm next going to call, is Brian Roeder here? Okay, how about Gretchen Peterson? Gretchen, please come forward. And Joyce Moynan and Bob Lawrence. The three of you could please come forward.
Madam Chair, while they're coming forward, can I ask a question of our committee administrator? I had a question from a constituent, and I just want to put this on the record that, first of all, that this really would only apply in scenarios where an employer has at least 25 or more employees, and only those employees that are in that situation would be paying into the fund.
And that is true, and I can answer that question for you. There is a second phase of this proposal, which is a voluntary opt-in for smaller employers, but initially that's correct.
Right, and the second question is for those that are paying into the fund, if they choose not to use the access that fund, there will be nothing coming back to them directly as some means of receiving any money that had been paid into that account. That's my understanding.
That's true.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Whichever of you wants to go first, please go ahead.
I'll go first. Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, my name is Gretchen Peterson, and I'm the Vice President of Human Resources for Hannah Anderson. We urge you to support Senate Bill 966, which would enable more employees to be at home during periods with significant family impact, such as upon the birth or adoption of a child, or to care for a family member with a serious health condition. As a company with progressive employee relations and policies, we are very supportive of our associates as they attempt to balance their work and family life. Even with this support, it is likely that an associate would experience significant financial hardship when taking leave under OFLA. While an associate may be eligible for unpaid time off, they are at times reluctant or anxious to take in taking the necessary time because of the financial impact to their families. This can result in a parent returning to work more quickly after the birth or adoption of a child than they are realistically prepared to do. This scenario often may result in increased absenteeism, productivity issues, and morale issues at work when even 6 additional weeks of leave may have provided them time to stabilize a child care arrangement or ensure a breastfeeding routine is well established. Another example is when an associate's spouse is diagnosed with cancer. The treatment protocol usually calls for immediate intervention, and the support and assistance of a spouse is critical from the time of diagnosis through treatment and recovery. We've seen firsthand the level of emotional stress and anxiety that this situation creates. Even during these challenging economic times for business, we as a company want our associates to be there for their spouses during such a difficult time. Hannah Anderson has 29 retail store locations and employees in 16 different states, including California and New Jersey, both of whom have passed paid family leave laws. Our experience has been that paid family leave, when structured properly, has not proven to be a burden for our company. In California, where this benefit has been provided since 2004, the employer obligation consists of providing a brochure to new hires and to employees who request a leave. Employers are not responsible for providing claim forms to employees, and they do not process any payments to the employee. The fund is administered and funded through the State Disability Insurance Fund, which is an employee-paid income tax. We have not experienced any negative impact to our business due to this program. In New Jersey, where we also have a store location, they passed a family leave law in 2008. The benefit is funded through the same employee-paid tax. As this program does not yet have eligibility for claims until July of this year, we haven't had direct claims experience, but we do not anticipate that it would create an administrative burden to our company. We support this benefit and program as it ensures that all working families have access to the most critical benefit of all during a family crisis or event, and that is time. We can't forget that time at these moments is irreplaceable. The bonding that takes place between a newborn and a parent in those first few months, or the support of a spouse when a patient is undergoing chemotherapy, can't be scheduled for later. The opportunity to be there during these critical times should not be available only to those higher earning individuals in our society. Hannah Anderson supports having access to this time for all of our associates, and we ask your support at Oregon Family Week. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your comments.
Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, I am Joyce DeMonin, Public Outreach Director for AARP Oregon. AARP Oregon has more than 534,000 members statewide, and that means about 1 in 7 Oregonians belongs to AARP. We strongly support Senate Bill 966. I have provided you with some written testimony, so I'm not going to go through the whole thing. I know you'll be looking at it later. I'll just tell you that I have had experiences in caregiving with my mother and 8 years ago with my father as he died. There, you cannot plan for some of this time off, and I'm very fortunate, I feel, to have a very generous vacation and sick leave policy. But for workers who don't have this time off, I know a lot of the discussion today has been around raising children or maybe a spouse, but we also have end-of-life care. 80% of elder caregiving is actually done by families. And if you think about it, when families have the time and resources to care for their elders, that means that the rest of society doesn't have to pick up the burden for that. Over half of our members in the past 2 years who were surveyed on this issue say that they have cared for an elder within the past 2 years. So for all of these reasons, plus the fact that AARP supports families, we know that we're not just, even though we're a membership, we're just 50 and older, we're part of families that have children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and all of these people and parts of the families are important to us at AARP. So along with all these other partners, we strongly support this bill, and thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bob Lawrence, and I'm here representing the Governor's Commission on Senior Services. Before I get into my formal testimony, I want to tell you that family caregiving is near and dear to my heart. For the last 5 years, the Governor's Commission on Senior Services has made this one of our top priorities. We had a bill the last two legislative sessions to provide a tax credit for family caregivers, and of course we couldn't find the funds to fund that. And I was really gratified when, before Congress, Maria Shriver said that what is really needed is a tax credit for family caregivers. So I have been a family caregiver with three very young children. I was very lucky in a way because I worked for the state and I had good sick leave, which I used up very quickly. I also had a good insurance policy. But despite that, the stress was really quite formidable and the children started to pick up on this. So it was not possible for me to take off my work and be at home. But we made it. I also have had a family caregiving problem with my mother who lived in Wisconsin. And that was a very interesting experience. So this is why the Governor's Commission is very supportive of 966. The Commission supports Senate Bill 966 for the following reasons, and we took a long-range view rather than just taking a look at this bill per se. But Senate Bill 966 is multi-generational, and I think that's extremely important. Senate Bill 966 addresses a need that is emerging as urgent and critical, and I will get into that in a little bit. Senate Bill 966 is a good mix of private and public efforts to address a social problem. I think this is going to be our only salvation in the future as we have less and less funds available. Senate Bill 966 provides a good venue for far-sighted and viable human resource management, and I think that's been attested to in other testimony. Senate Bill 966 looks to the future, enhances the long-range planning efforts that started in 2005 with the Campaign for Seniors and People with Disabilities and the Governor's Commission working with Senior and People with Disabilities and O4AD. I understand now that there is no fiscal impact, so I would remove that particular thing. I would like to quote an example of some type of private and partnerships, public partnerships that could really enhance this whole process of providing services. This is an article from the Oregonian dated April 3rd, 2009 in the business section.
And Bob, we will read your written testimony if you could just summarize because we have a lot of other people.
Lastly, during the community visits we made over the last 4 years, we consistently heard about the growing need for more respite care and family caregiving. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay. Yes, Senator Moniz Anderson.
Is it Gretchen?
Yes.
Explain to me how does a person apply for family leave? Do they go through they get permission from the employer, and then they send an application to
in Oregon or California?
Well, we don't have one.
Right.
Well, I guess
family leave. Yeah. It's just not paid. In California, no, they actually apply through the state. We are notified that a claim's been processed, but we don't get involved in it.
Okay.
We provide them, if they notify us that they're going to request a leave, we are required to give them a brochure. And we are also required to do that at the time of hire. But other than that, we are not involved in the claims process.
So fraud isn't really an issue. There is checks and balances to make
correct.
Sure that...
We get a notification that someone's... And so we could say, no, this is not an employee of Hannah Anderson,
yeah.
or no, they haven't worked for us for this length of time.
Okay.
But that's the only issue.
And then I know at least my daughter, who's a teacher, she has to pay for her replacement in a family leave. The employer would have to come up with paying for the time off that a person would be taking if you needed someone to perform the work. Is
correct.
That correct?
And that's correct under the current Oregon family
yes.
law, so that doesn't change.
That's what I needed clarified. Thank you.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much. And thank you all for being here. And I think we are going to need to start limiting the time for our witnesses to 3 minutes apiece, because otherwise we'll never get through everybody that signed up. So next we'll call Katie Bethel, Teresa Weiss, and Allison Hurd. If the three of you could please come forward. Sorry. So I think Allison was really Isabel. So if Isabel could come forward.
I believe Isabel is out in the hall.
Yeah, I think she's in the overflow room.
Right. And
there she comes.
So she is coming forward,
yes.
But why don't you go ahead?
You go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum. My name is Katie Bethel, for the record, and I'm here representing MomsRising.org. Moms Rising has 4,000 members in Oregon, all who care about paid family leave and Senate Bill 966. Our members care deeply about paid family leave because they struggle every day with not having paid family leave. Moms and people who are caring for families in today's economy are caught sandwiched between competing priorities at work and at home, between kids and aging parents, and between paying the bills so they can put food on the kitchen table and actually having the time to sit at the kitchen table with their families. This time and money sandwich begs the need for a common sense policy solution like paid family leave, which will help make sure that moms and everybody who's caring for their families aren't stuck in the middle. The mom sandwich that I'm talking about isn't a series of exceptional cases. We're hearing a lot of stories today, and I think everybody has a story about a time that they needed to take care of their family. Statistical trends show that the time and money sandwich is happening everywhere to everyone. In today's modern families, more than 50% of couples have both people in the workforce, and 72% of mothers are in the labor force. These new trends over the last couple of decades show why we're here today. The increase in the number of two-income earner households in the past several decades is because families need two incomes to stay afloat, but our policies and our programs haven't caught up with this reality. Family and medical leave insurance is a policy that's needed to bring us into these modern times. In fact, Oregon is to be applauded for bringing this bill forward. It's a national embarrassment that we don't have this policy yet. We are one of only four countries in the world that doesn't offer some form of paid leave for mothers. The other three countries are Papua New Guinea, Lesotho, and Swaziland. Without family and medical leave insurance, and with high child care costs of up to $10,000 per year and even more for newborns, people often end up having to quit their jobs temporarily when they become parents, and this drives many families into poverty. In fact, having a baby is a leading cause of poverty spells in this country, which is a time when income dips below what's needed to meet basic living expenses like food and rent. Today, a full quarter of families in this country with children under six live in poverty, and family medical leave insurance will make a significant difference, especially in this time where families are already so economically vulnerable. There are a lot of benefits economically, there are benefits socially, and there are also benefits to businesses. You may know that women business owners are the fastest growing group of business owners in the country, and Moms Rising members are no exception. Our members who are business owners have signed a letter in support of family leave insurance, which I provided to you today, and it's signed by business owners from around our state, including well-known G Diapers, who's testifying today, and my personal favorite, Divine Cupcakes in Eugene. Business owners, especially small business owners, recognize the value that a statewide family leave insurance program would have for their businesses, and I know there are several here today who will talk about that. I want to close by telling you that as an organizer, I talk to people every day about this issue, and this is not a one-off issue. This is something that touches every single voter in Oregon, and I urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. My name is Teresa Weiss. I live in Portland, Oregon, and I'm a member of a grassroots group called Parents for Paid Leave. And I'm here to ask you to wholeheartedly support the paid leave family insurance legislation. Paid leave for our family was the missing bridge that could have saved our community and Oregon taxpayers the financial costs that our family was simply unable to bear during our experience, and that ultimately led us to a very ruinous place financially. Like so many parents out there, we thought we had planned for everything, and I have submitted a written copy of my testimony, so I'll try to be brief, but I think basically the point I would like to make is that we often hear as parents that you should have planned better, and we were those people that planned very, very, very well. We saved 3 months of wage for the time that I would not be paid for my family leave, and the plan that we came up with did not encompass all of the things that did happen to us. My bed rest during pregnancy, my child was born six weeks premature, the extra costs that were incurred both by our family for medical expenses and also in the system's medical expenses that the medical system took on for our son's health concerns. I would say that his early birth also set back not only our financial plans for how we had planned for family leave, but then also his ongoing medical complications due to his premature birth, none of which we had planned for, continued to set us back financially. I think the part that I would like to underline as well is that in addition to our role as parents, my husband and I are also textbook examples of the sandwich generation. We also both have aging, baby boomer parents. who are you know, nearing retirement and who are kind of living with these precarious health conditions. All four of our parents are beginning to experience serious health problems. You know, 10 years ago, I had to take a month off work to take care of my mom for her first major surgery. And it was an abdominal surgery that was pretty concerning and life-threatening at the time. And I was a college student, and I was able to just leave my restaurant, you know, working job and take that time and go. I didn't have anything but a car insurance payment for my VW bus. And now I have a mortgage. I have a family. I have a real job. I'm an adult now. And it wouldn't be possible in that same way with those same responsibilities to do that. And I see that coming up for us very soon, like many people my age. I can't imagine what I'll do when this scenario comes up for us. And I think, finally, as a systems-trained family therapist, I can't help but wonder about the pressure parenting and pregnancy experiences like the ones we had and like the ones we hear so commonly put on a system that's unprepared for them. I see this family paid leave insurance as a way to really shore up the system perspective. In my experience, they are far more common than you would think. I mean, I don't have concrete data. Other people will provide that. But I can't... I think the inexpensive safety net, this front-loading, one that would have allowed us to do for our son what he really needed instead of just enough to get by. His health care expenses during his first year were sizable, and I believe that having the ability to take that time off he needed might have shifted our son's outcomes in a way that would have prevented a lot of financial stress for us and also could have saved the entire system so much money that it ended up costing the system. Two other points very briefly that I'd like to make. I'm really unfortunate, Senator Moniz Anderson, about your daughter's experience working in a school district. I myself work in a school district, and our teachers and myself as a certified staff, we do not have to pay for our subs, even for family medical leave. So that may be more of a union issue. Maybe our union has a different contract negotiation. I'm not sure, but. Even so, I know amongst our employees, it is an incredible burden to find ways to cover that expense throughout the school district. And then the other point, too, that I just like to sort of highlight a different perspective is that I'm a recent mother, and I will be again a new mom soon. But even before this, when I was paying on my student loans, which are a sizable payment for me, $42 isn't enough a dent in my student loan payments to warrant the benefit that this would add to my family and to my system, and I'm absolutely willing, even with a mortgage payment, to pay that $42 per year for this. Thank you for your time. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for your comments. And please go ahead.
Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, my name is Isabel Toledo Silvestre. I live in Portland, Oregon. I'm an immigrant from Spain who has lived here for 17 years. I have three children, a 9-year-old daughter, a 3-year-old boy, and an infant of 8 months. I'm also a working mother. I work as a nurse practitioner at the Multnomah County Health Department 3 days per week. I'm writing this letter to explain how not having paid family leave affected my family, why I think it's so relevant that we implement a paid family leave here. When I had my first daughter, I could take her with me to work, and the transition to work and parenthood was relatively easy. Then my husband left me. I was blessed to meet my current husband, and when I got pregnant with my first boy, my husband was in graduate school, and I had recently started working at the health department. I had recently graduated from a nurse practitioner program myself, and we just purchased a home, so much of our savings have been depleted while we supported each other in our educations. As an employee of the county, we were surprised to learn that while on maternity leave, I would not have either paid family leave or medical insurance, which was very stressful and scary for us. My husband, who is very responsible and hardworking, was very worried, and we had to request high-interest personal loans to cover our basic living expenses and the cost of our health insurance. We're still paying back those loans years later. The strain was very hard on our relationship to the point we almost separated. For our second son, we accommodated for the time off that I would need to recover and back with our baby by having my husband take an additional job. He's a teacher, but took on additional work doing landscaping and tree work and fishing in Alaska during the weeks immediately after our son's birth. By not having paid family leave, in order for us to cover the expense of me being off work, my husband has to be working all the time at home. So during that critical period of a newborn, you know, our family could never be together. The Pay Family Life Insurance proposed in Senate Bill 966 is a good benefit. It wouldn't have replaced our full wages. However, it would have helped my family tremendously. It would have eased some of the financial burden we incur with both of our sons' births. It would have allowed my husband more time to bond with our sons and us more time to transition as a working family. I think that Pay Family Leave helps ease our transitions to working parenthood and helps create thriving families. It relieves a burden to our small and medium-sized businesses by providing a benefit they can't afford to offer. And most importantly, it provides a healthy start for our children. Thanks so much for your attention and allowing me to testify.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Thank you all for being here. And next will come Mary King, Lisa Senders, and Cynthia Pappas. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Please go ahead.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, my name is Mary King. I'm a professor in the economics department at Portland State University. I very much appreciate the opportunity to testify this afternoon. I support the passage of SB 966 to create Oregon Family Leave Insurance. As you know, the United States stands alone among affluent countries in failing at the national level to provide paid leave to parents. We may think of this as something that only the Scandinavian countries have implemented, but all the other industrialized countries in the world have created this kind of benefit for their citizens, including Canada. I mention Canada because I think it may be the most similar country to us in terms of culture and economy, and yet their family leave program pays 55% of earnings for up to 50 weeks in combined maternal and parental and paternal leave benefits. So for a benefit of $17,500 per child, the value of that is nearly 10 times the benefit we're talking about today. States are stepping into the gap left by the federal government, following the lead of California, which, as you've heard, implemented a program in 2004. Oregon should join them. I believe that the evidence shows that paid family leave is good for employers. It's good for employees, especially women and young workers. It's good for children and other people requiring care. It's good for the state economy now, and it's good for the state economy in the future. Paid family leave is good for employees because it encourages people to stay with one employer. As you've heard, people return at very high rates after paid family leave. It's good for employers because it reduces uncertainty about when employees will be absent in order to fulfill their caregiving obligations. And with increasing life expectancies in smaller families, more and more employees have responsibilities for assisting with the care of elderly parents, spouses who are ill or disabled, as well as children or grandchildren. This is a very modest bill, as you know, which does not create an additional tax for employers. California employers have reported that they have found this to be an insignificant administrative burden. Employers benefit because the paid family leave, as structured by this bill, is created as a social insurance, so no employer is penalized financially if they happen to employ an unusually high proportion of people who need to take family leave. That's the sense in which this is insurance, social insurance. You've heard, I think, about the ways in which paid family leave is good for employees. I'd like, as an economist, to point out the way that it maintains income at a critical time in people's lives, particularly for young parents. It encourages people to stay attached to the labor force, builds their skills, raises their productivity, increases their wages, and maintains their health benefits. As you know, most mothers can no longer afford to stay home with their kids as people used to be able to. The real value of men's wages have fallen, the cost of living has risen, and it's become more expensive to raise kids. Kids need more than what they used to. They can no longer be starting work as a teenager. People need to stay in school longer to be competitive in this economy. The cost of housing, transportation, medical care, and college tuition have all risen much faster than the cost of living in general. For this reason, the majority of the people are living in two-income families, and we see extreme rates of poverty in single-mother households. Women who stay home to care for their kids in two-parent families run very real risk of future poverty for themselves and their children. in the event of divorce, death, disability, unemployment, illness, alcoholism, a whole range of things that can happen in families. And American families have responded by changing the way that we live. Two-thirds of American children now live in families in which both parents work, and many kids live with a working mother as with a working father. But our social insurance programs don't reflect these risks and that reality.
And we will read your written testimony. I just need to ask you to summarize.
Yes, I apologize. Paid family leave is good for kids, for the stability and reduced financial stress. It's good for the elderly and the ill, who almost universally prefer home care. It's good for the economy as a whole. As I mentioned, we maintain productivity. It keeps us more competitive. It's the one issue on which the World Economic Forum considers us to be less competitive because our family policies don't provide for the near equal participation of women in the business world. And make a last point. Paid family leave helps to reduce child poverty, which is the major concern for the economy in the future. Deprivation in childhood is the single biggest indicator of future unemployment, incarceration, substance abuse, low educational achievement, early childbearing, and future poverty. And so for our most important economic task, raising the next labor force, a leave like this is invaluable. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon.
Thank you for your testimony. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. My name is Cynthia Pappas, and I'm the CEO of Planned Parenthood of Southwestern Oregon, and I have that crud that's going around, so pardon my voice. I appreciate the opportunity to testify on behalf of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon in favor of Senate Bill 966 today. Planned Parenthood is committed to delivering the highest quality care, teaching medically accurate and age-appropriate sex ed, and advocating for women's reproductive rights. Each year, statewide, approximately 100,000 women, men, and teens visit one of our 18 health centers. Many of our patients are married, many have children, and most are living at below or at the poverty level. Every day, as an organization, we provide medical care to some of Oregon's most vulnerable citizens. As a leading provider for women's health care, Planned Parenthood supports public policy that strengthens women's health and the health of families. In the past, you've heard us up here fighting for broader access to birth control, as well as access to emergency contraception. This legislative session, we're proud to fully endorse the creation of the Oregon Family Leave Insurance Program. Planned Parenthood in Oregon knows this legislation would positively impact many of our patients who decide to begin their families but financially are unable to take advantage of family leave. Offering some compensation would ensure women and men can take time to recover and bond after the birth or adoption of a child or care for a loved one who is ill. Planned Parenthood in Oregon is a nonprofit and currently employs 307 people. Most of our staff are women, and in 2008, we had 19 employees utilize parental leave. Due to our strong commitment to women's health, we feel it is critical to our mission of providing, promoting, and protecting access to reproductive health care to support our employees' use and access to parental leave. We take pride in facilitating the use of parental leave currently provided for in state and federal law. Educating and encouraging our employees about this leave has only made our business stronger. Our employees are happier, they're more loyal, and once they come back to work, they're able to completely engage because they've fully recovered and have had time to bond with their babies. To go one step further, paid leave insurance could help us retain our experienced and well-trained workers who might otherwise try to hold on to their jobs until the demands of caring for a family member become so overwhelming that we would lose them altogether. So we believe paid family leave helps employees and managers alike know what is expected. Providing the support families need following the birth or adoption of a child is a critical step towards equality and justice and protects women's reproductive health. Planned Parenthood encourages you to support Senate Bill 966, and I want to thank you for the time to testify today.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And please, I'm sorry, please go ahead.
Madam Chair Rosenbaum, I have a crud as well, and members of the committee. But only two things got me out of bed today. One, I had a suicidal patient this morning I needed to address, and it would be negligent not to have addressed that person, as it would be negligent to not represent women today in the research that I've done. I'd like to talk with you today about my research that I began a few years ago with women who struggled with work-family conflict issues and the solutions that I've found.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you tell us?
Oh, I'm sorry. For the record, my name is Dr. Lisa Sanders, and my address is 1133 Northwest 21st, Portland, Oregon, 97209. And I represent working mothers and all caregivers, actually, but in particular, my research with working mothers. And I support Senate Bill 966 for paid family leave. I'd like to talk about, again, the research that I've done. Initially, I became interested in this because I was struggling so much with my own work-family conflict issues and being pulled professionally as well as at home. And I thought, oh, I must be inferior in some way. I'm not juggling it, and everyone else seems to be able to handle it so well. Well, that obviously is not true. And I left my position as a professor across the street at Willamette as a psychologist, and I taught psychology and law. I'm also an attorney. So that I, because I, knowing then they didn't have paid family leave, now I'm happy to say that they do have paid family leave. But it changed the course of my entire career. I was invited by a group of OBGYNs to join their practice because 50% of the people that they saw did not need medical care. They needed psychological intervention. And I soon came to find out why that was. But torn with this conflict in my own, I decided it would be very interesting to go back and address, look at what is in the hearts of women, what is going on that's creating so much conflict for them. If I could listen to the hearts of women, I felt I could find some solutions. I hit the books. They were pretty meager at the time. And I interviewed women in an 11-page interview schedule that I created for about 100 hours, not to mention the hundreds of clinical hours that I've seen women. And I discovered not only the problem, but solutions. And I tried to come up with a treatment for these women. Well, you know, I tried to create a self-help book, and I realized that what a misnomer, because self-help implies that you, as a woman, can indeed solve these problems if you have the right skills. Well, you know what? The problem's a lot bigger than that, and we need to solve this together. So each week in my practice, I encounter women who are overwhelmed by the demands of trying to be the best parents they can be and still engage in satisfying work that produces sufficient income. And Oprah, actually, you know, our barometer of America's well-being, polled 15,000 women in 2007, working mothers, and found that 66% would quit their jobs to stay home with their kids if they could. Oh, if only they could. And many don't want to, but they feel this pull that to be the best parent they can, they should be. And it's not because they hate their jobs. It's just all too damn much. So why is it so hard? What did I find out in my research? Not to mention the amount of tears and flushed faces and pregnant pauses that I saw, and women who dropped out of all types of professions because there was no paid leave or systematic leave for them. I found three basic reasons. One is economic, two are social and cultural realities, and three, phenomenal biological realities that we now find in neuroscience that we've only recently come to find out in the last few years. The economic realities, I believe, have been addressed. The average family can have a home only if both adults work now. That 75% of household costs are now consumed with housing, health insurance, college education, and child care. That does not include food, clothing, or gas and utilities. Savings and retirement funds in this country have decreased to almost zero in the last 30 years for half of our population. If one person loses his or her job or becomes ill or has to take care of another, there's no cushion.
And I'm going to need to ask you to summarize.
I think it's been well documented. People need to work. From a neuroscience standpoint, the first, after 2 weeks of gestation, the brain of the woman, the mother, takes on a massive brain restructuring and metabolic change. There are a production of hormones that create bonding and attachment that are necessary for the development of the child. Interestingly, in men, they, of course, are famous for their testosterone, that actually goes down. And different hormones occur in them that increases their nurturing in the early childhood. So the parents are set for bonding. And we find that children who have not had that bonding suffer severe developmental issues, and we see them later on in our judicial process oftentimes. Breastfeeding obviously is important. The stress of a working mother, when we look at hormones, the stress hormone, we find that with cortisol levels, that the working mother has higher levels of cortisol than men, working men, mothers who stay at home, or working women without children. The sleep deprivation of the average mother is 2 hours per night. On the social culture issues, 50% of divorces take place after the birth of the first child. There's tremendous strain on the marriage, not to mention sex life, which might bear on that a little bit. But the children, and then child care, how much is available in the first 6 to 8 weeks of life? Not a lot. And lastly, the benefits of paid family leave. We know that it's associated with improved health both for mothers and children. There's data to support that, that the best maternal mental health takes place with paid family leaves, and that women will return to the workforce more readily in their childbearing ages. I have data that I've submitted to you on employer benefits, and I have talked to employers about what would benefit them in terms of paid family leave. And the ones who find it successful, I've talked to a vice president at Nike, and he states that they're all geared for it. They keep basically a file of, as long as there's planning, they have an ongoing process to anticipate people's skills and availability, and they find that there's actually a very high demand for this temporary work through retired people, for us aging baby boomers.
I hate to cut you off, but we do still have a lot of other people waiting, and we will read all of the written testimony that's been submitted. So thank you all for being
here,
especially when some of you are so sick. So next we'll call Kat Livingston, Anna Stiefvater, and Jennifer Bevacqua. And I do want to remind you, you have 3 minutes, and we are going to start cutting people off at the timer. So, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Dr. Kat Livingston. I'm a family physician. I'm here to testify in favor of Senate Bill 966. So this bill is a really excellent opportunity to improve the health of people, both the caregivers as well as those that they're caring for. And there's a specific clinical story that I want to share with you. This was a gentleman who I took care of about a year and a half ago. He was 69, came into my service for just a moderate pneumonia. We treated him with antibiotics, a respiratory treatment, sent him home. And his daughter was actually taking care of him, and she had to go back to work due to financial concerns. Because he didn't quite manage his medicines okay at home, he didn't end up taking those antibiotics once she had gone back to work. He then came back into my service a week later with a really severe pneumonia. He ended up coding on the floor. He required intubation, went to the intensive care unit, and had a pretty debilitating stroke. So, you know, if she had been able to take this time off, you know, due to which she took off because of financial constraints, if that would have changed his outcome and possibly prevented this horrible consequence, I think it's just really sad that people are making decisions based on financial constraints and not on what's best for the health of people. And as a physician, I see this all the time, and it just, it's horrible. I mean, this is why I got into medicine, because I believe that there are powerful things we can do to improve people's health. But all the time, people are constrained by these financial choices instead of doing really clear, straightforward steps that would really be the best for their families. And I have a lot more in my written testimony, and I think I'll just skip that. But just, I urge you to remember that story and just to think about how this could be one way to really change health outcomes in a very meaningful way. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and we will definitely read your testimony.
Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to discuss the importance of family leave insurance. My name is Anna Stiefvater. I'm here today to testify on behalf of the Oregon Public Health Association. And the Oregon Public Health Association supports this family leave insurance bill because we see it as a cost-effective way to promote health,
and because it is will especially benefit low-income families who are most at risk for poor health outcomes. I work as a public health nurse, which allows me to visit families with young children in their homes. Many of the families I see are low-income. I hope that briefly today in what I discuss and in my written testimony, I can give a voice to some of these families, because these are families that aren't here today because they're at work and because they're caring for their kids. The families that I see are more likely to be in poor health. They're more likely to have children at risk for poor developmental outcomes, and they're less likely to have jobs that offer any paid leave. Just wanted also to briefly remind you that this is a lot of Oregon's kids that we're talking about. 39% of all children in Oregon and 44% of children under age 6 live in families that are low income. There's quite a bit of research that shows, and I think common sense validates, that parental leaves after the birth of a child can contribute to healthy child development. Babies whose mothers return to work within less than 6 weeks of childbirth are less likely to be breastfed, less likely to be up to date on their immunizations. Children whose mothers return to work full-time shortly after giving birth are less likely to be taken to the pediatrician for their regular checkups. More time for parents allows for the formation of bonds between parents and children, fostering positive emotional development of the children. In my home visits, I've seen the breastfeeding challenges that women face as they return to work shortly after giving birth because the rent is due. I spoke just this morning to a young woman who had her baby on Friday, who was worried about introducing the bottle and formula to the baby because she has her first shift at work scheduled for next weekend. I've observed the young children who are most at risk for poor health shuffled around between family members and friends while their parents return to work. I've helped families in applying for food stamps and cash assistance when their sick children did not allow them to return to work and the bills begin to pile up. There's also some evidence that parents, both mothers and fathers, benefit from being able to take leave. Mothers who are able to delay returning to work experience fewer depressive symptoms than those who return to work earlier. And dads who can take leave after a child's birth are more involved in child rearing once they return to work. These benefits for parents are also clearly contributing to improved child well-being. So I have spent a lot of time listening to the stress and sadness that families feel as they struggle to juggle with work and family and caring for children. Family leave insurance would decrease some of the stress for all children. And for low-income and vulnerable families, this program may allow them and make the difference and allow them to take the time to care for their children. It would be a step towards ensuring better outcomes for their children and an economic security for their families. I encourage you to support this bill, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. And please go ahead.
Okay. Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, my name is Jennifer Bavacqua, and I'm a resident of Portland, Oregon. I'm speaking on behalf of myself and the Oregon Nurses Association today. I am a registered nurse and a pediatric nurse practitioner, currently working at Dornbecker Children's Hospital in the Pediatric Intensive Care Unit. I've been in the field of nursing for 10 years, all in pediatrics. Additionally, I'm the daughter of aging baby boomers, as well as a wife, a mother of a toddler, and a baby due in August. I very much support Senate Bill 966. Over the last year, I've been drawn to involvement with the grassroots group Parents for Paid Leave because of both my professional and personal experiences with FMLA. Professionally, I have multiple colleagues who are registered nurses who have been unable to take unpaid leave to its maximum of 12 weeks. Some have not even been able to take it to 4, which I think illustrates how this can affect even middle-class families. But my friends and colleagues' stories pale in comparison to stories that I see from families whose children are hospitalized. Many of the families we see at Dornbecker are in crisis because of their child's illness, and all too often because their financial circumstances allow for no uncertainty, like illness or injury. A large portion of our nation and our state's population is made up of low-income families who struggle to make ends meet daily. Saving 3 months of living expenses to get them through FMLA's unpaid leave is laughable. This is even a tall order for middle-class families, some middle-class families, as my friend's stories illustrate. The impact of unpaid leave during a child's hospitalization can be frightening, yet we nurses have grown numb to it because it is the way it is. Many families are faced with choosing their financial security over their desire to be with their hospitalized child. Should they go to work, or should they stay with their little one? Should just one parent go to work and the other stay? What if it's a critical illness? How can either parent leave their infant or child while in the pediatric ICU? Yet they often do leave. Often the parents choose to ensure financial security and leave the child in the full care of the nurses. And while we nurses do our best, we are often relegated to meeting the basic medical needs of the child and tending to our other patients. Infants and toddlers are left to cry, sometimes to exhaustion, and must be kept in four-sided cribs with a top, otherwise known by us nurses as a baby cage, for their safety while unsupervised. Because of these consequences of, besides these consequences of unpaid leave, I see other ramifications. Nelson's, the premier textbook on pediatrics, states that 15 to 18% of children have some form of chronic condition, with 6 to 7% of children having limitation of normal daily living due to a chronic condition. These families often require frequent or long hospitalizations. Without any paid leave at all, the stressors on these families mount. I have seen families go bankrupt, lose their home, divorce, and worse while dealing with a childhood condition. Approximately $40 per employee per year seems like a small price to pay to help these families out and ensure insurance for ourselves. After all, if we want a healthy society, we must cultivate healthy families. Paid family leave insurance will cultivate healthy families in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you all for your testimony. Next, we'll call Tony Fuentes, Jason Graham Nye, and Bridget Beasley Danner. And you don't need to wait, just go ahead.
Great. Chair Rosenbaum, committee members, it's a pleasure to be here. My name is Tony Fuentes. My wife and I own Milagros Boutique, and we count ourselves among some of the many businesses that support this legislation. We have two children. We know firsthand how challenging it is to balance the demands of caring for a family and providing for it. For this reason, we provide our employees paid and unpaid leave, subsidized child care, and a variety of other family-friendly benefits. Back in 1995, the legislature took a bold step and expanded access to family leave for working Oregonians. The goal of the Oregon Family Leave Act was and is to help workers provide for the physical and emotional well-being of their families. The legislature adopted that because they had the foresight to realize how valuable these things were. However, 14 years later, the goal of OFLA remains a worthy one, but its full promise has not been realized. The simple truth is many workers cannot afford to give up a paycheck to care for their families. But having to live paycheck to paycheck does not make you less of a parent, less of a son, or less of a daughter, certainly not less of a human being. The Paid Family Leave Act is a modest proposal. It is not big government or big bureaucracy at work. It will be self-sufficient, easy to administer. Social insurance is certainly nothing new. But this humble plan packs a real punch. It will help countless Oregonians face the trial of caring for their families during challenging times. Hardworking parents and partners deserve the opportunity to welcome a newborn baby, aid in a family member, and address other family needs. These are the things that strengthen families, and the Paid Family Leave Act will make this opportunity real. Stronger families mean a stronger Oregon. Socially stronger, physically stronger, and economically stronger. This is why I support the Paid Family Leave Act, and I hope you will too. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Hi, Chair Rosenbaum and committee members. My name is Jason Graham Nye. I am the CEO and co-founder of a Portland, Oregon company called G Diapers. I come at this from a number of aspects. I'm an Australian. My wife's a Canadian. We moved to the US and proactively chose Oregon to launch our business 4 years ago, and have brought with us many of the benefits that employers offer in our countries. As I said, we employ 17 people. We offer things like 4 weeks paid time off as soon as you join the company. We offer on-site daycare for all of our employees' children. There's 17 staff and 12 kids. We're soon to be outnumbered, I think. We offer medical leave, We offer 3 months paid maternity leave. So it's these things that we think are critical to running a successful business, and we're very much in support of this bill. We think it's very consistent with what we do, so we're looking forward to it being approved so we can, our employees can take advantage of it. It's important to note that only 7% of all companies, big or small in the US, offer any kind of paid leave. It's been talked about before here that, you know, other countries are just far more forward-thinking on this issue, and it's exciting that Oregon's going to have this soon. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for waiting so patiently, too. And please go ahead.
Hi, committee members. My name is Bridget Danner. I'm also from Portland, Oregon, and the owner of a small business called Blue Sky Wellness Studio. We have less than 25 employees, so we would be part of the opt-in group. And unlike my colleague, I have a business that's less than 2 years old, and I have not been able to afford to give my employees the benefits that they deserve as human beings, such as paid sick leave, paid vacation, maternity leave, time to care for sick relatives. So I've found it very hard to set money aside for these things. We're living basically month to month as a business. So I would be thrilled to see this bill passed and be able to, for their employees to be able to set money aside. And then personally, I'm my own employee. I became pregnant 6 months after opening a business, which so I was very excited but also scared because I had put all my personal savings and all my credit into this business. And I worked basically 6 days a week throughout my pregnancy till 40 weeks to make my business solvent, to keep my employees employed, and was not able to put away any extra money for my maternity leave. So we used our federal income tax return so I could stay home for 6 weeks, and then I was right back to work. So I support this bill, and thanks for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we'll call Kevin Finney and Patty Whitney Wise. And I think we skipped over Val Jack. Val, do you want to come forward too?
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, I'm Kevin Finney. I'm the Public Policy Director for Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. Thank you for this opportunity to testify today. Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon supports Senate Bill 96 for many of the good reasons that you've heard today. I won't repeat those. Let me just say that I think we and many in the religious community support it because it resonates with two key values we hold, the promotion of stable families and the promotion of economic justice. In light of that, I am presenting you today with a sign-on letter signed by 100 religious leaders throughout Oregon. This includes representatives of the Christian, Jewish, Buddhist, and other faith traditions. It includes clergy and congregational members from Astoria to Ashland, from Coos Bay to Ontario and Vail, from the Dalles and Gresham down to Grants Pass and Medford. And we hope that you'll take time to look at many of the religious leaders who've signed on to this letter and urge their support for Senate Bill 966. I also want to just quickly share my own personal story related to the need for paid family leave insurance. 2.5 years ago, when my wife was pregnant with our second child, I was what we might euphemistically call between jobs and collecting unemployment insurance benefits at the time. My wife, though employed in a white-collar job for a major urban daily newspaper here in Oregon, did not receive or was not entitled to any maternity leave benefits, and so we had to make a decision about how to live. We felt it was very important to take 3 months for her to bond with a child and recover from her C-section and so forth, and so the question was how to finance that, and we used that most imprudent of financing methods. We put it on our credit cards. I think we're still paying interest on some of that financing, but we were lucky because we were in a position to be able to do that, and many families in Oregon are not in a position to be able to do that, and as a consequence, don't get to spend that time bonding with their children that's so critical in the early days of life. So for that reason and others, I just wanted to share my personal story and urge you all to support Senate Bill 966.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. I'm Patty Whitney Wise with the Oregon Hunger Task Force, and we're here in support as well of SB 966. I'd just like to say a little bit about the people who feel like they may pay into this and never use this source of funding. Just as many in the current economy have paid into federal taxes and helped to support the food stamp program for years, they are now having to turn to that program, and thank God it is there for them to help provide for their families. I see this bill in the same way, and for the task force, the reason that we are supporting it is because we worry about the many low-income families who are struggling to put food on the table and yet want to spend that time with their family for the bonding, for the help that provides for them in entering into this world and succeeding, and then for those of us in the sandwich generation who need to take care of our elderly parents, many of whom are on fixed incomes, including my mother. I'm fortunate that I'm in a job where I could take some time off, but many families can't, and it's really important that they be allowed at both ends of life and in between for their spouses to take that needed time. So we're very strongly in support of this program as one way to make sure that there is an insurance policy in place for families that will help create healthy communities. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Val Jack, and I am president of AFT Oregon Retirees, member of the Oregon Alliance for Retired Americans, but I'm really here to talk about my personal experiences, too. As union president, I saw many people who could have used some paid family leave, and there's been some cases where I myself could use it. 1995, the year my mother died, it became very obvious that if either she or my stepfather went to the doctor, somebody needed to be with them because by the time they got to the car, they couldn't remember what the doctor told them. So I thank heavens I worked for the school district. I had good sick time policy and vacation time that I could use. When she got very ill, the last, 4 or 5 weeks, I was down at Calabogo Terrace at her apartment more than I was at work. And thank goodness for a very understanding boss. The last week she was alive, I was there from 9 in the morning till 9 at night. We had a nurse that came in at 9 at night till 9 in the morning. I could have used some paid time leave besides my own vacation time. I could have used the time off after she died to sort of rest myself up. By 2006, I'm retired. My granddaughter has graduated from the University of Portland, has a job. She's married. She gives us a great grandson. A little under 5 weeks after he was born, she went back to work because she had to. Her husband was working, yes, but it takes two incomes to make it work. My husband and I volunteered to do full-time babysitting. And so my great-grandson, who's now a little over 2.5, is a very active member of AFT Oregon Retirees and the Oregon ARA, and he's been in the Capitol several times. Except my granddaughter was supposed to go back to work on Monday. Unfortunately, she is now on the rolls of those who are laid off, or Aiden and the 5-week-old would have been in the hall with the other children. So I'm just here to ask you to support Senate Bill 966, and those are a couple of cases where my family could certainly have used it. And we are among the lucky ones, I'll tell you, listening to some of these stories today. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all for your excellent testimony. I'm going to call Lisa Stewart and Julie Markowitz. Please go ahead.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. My name is Lisa Stewart, and I'm a professional social worker and a doctoral candidate at Portland State University. I'm also a recent immigrant to the States from Canada. And so I can appreciate this bill. This is a wonderful thing. Briefly, I'm here in the capacity of a researcher who's studied for the last 3 years the work-life challenges that parents and grandparents with exceptional care responsibilities have had in managing their family care with work. I've given you in my written testimony the current estimates of people in the U.S. who are providing care of some type to a family member. Exceptional care involves the care of
of extraordinary proportions to a child or an adolescent or an adult or an elder who has a chronic health condition. The care is unpredictable, it's intense, and oftentimes it involves taking time off work to provide really specialized care to a family member. In my research, I looked at the National Study of the Changing Workforce, and what I found was that employees with exceptional care responsibilities were more likely to report lower incomes, fewer supports within the workplace and community to help them manage their care responsibilities. As a result, they report higher levels of both work conflict and family conflict, which leads to more long-term effects of stress and problems with marriages and work. The U.S. lags behind other countries in providing adequate policy supports for families with exceptional care responsibilities. While federal policy offers job protection and 12 weeks of leave to workers, the scope of who is eligible and the unpaid nature of the leave make it an undesirable option for many families who provide this type of care. Studies of the impact of the FMLA have found that most people cannot afford the financial loss of taking time off work, so the uptake of this leave policy is often limited to middle-income, dual-earner families. For families with lower incomes, the result is that they try to maintain employment for as long as possible until the demands of care are so great that they have to quit their jobs or that they are fired because of an attendance issue. This forces families to utilize state-subsidized human services programs in larger numbers, which further burdens already strained social services. Paid family leave is needed to protect families from some of the hardships of providing care, and when utilized by low-wage earners, could represent a long-term cost savings to the state. As a social work researcher, I have seen how family illness can create financial and emotional hardship for Oregon families. When I speak about my research in the community, I'm often approached by people who provide this type of care. They tell me how they struggle in maintaining employment, and I'm always moved by the magnitude of their financial and emotional struggles. Senate Bill 966, as it will, decrease barriers for Oregon families who cannot afford to go without a paycheck by providing some sort of wage replacement so they can stay home to be with their family member who's ill. Thank you for hearing Senate Bill 699 today. The National Association of Social Workers urges the committee to consider moving this bill forward.
Thank you for your testimony.
Hi, Chairman Rose, members of the committee. I will keep this short. My name is Julie Markowitz, and I'm a healthcare worker. And what I would like to share is a personal story. 2.5 years ago, I was in a serious motorcycle accident. I was in ICU for 4 weeks and in the hospital 5 weeks. During that time, my husband and son did qualify for FMLA and OFLA, but they did not have ill time in where they work. So we had to make a decision. My husband was able to take 3 days off, but during the 4 weeks in ICU, I was in and out of a coma and unable to speak. I felt so abandoned when I woke up and no one was there for me to give the support that I needed. And I can't emphasize enough what it feels like that you might die and die alone. I still have problems with that. I needed someone there as an advocate. Someone always needs to be at a hospital with it, but not having anyone there to talk for you was just impossible. When I was allowed to go home, I was only allowed to go home with the understanding I could not be alone, and that was for a 3-month period. So what we had to depend on is my family and friends, but every once in a while I would end up being home alone. I was so frightened and terrified because some of the times I could not speak, and it caused such a burden on my husband and me because he felt so guilty. But in order to survive, he had to work. I mean, in order to keep the condition. So it caused, you know, a great deal of, even now, emotion to me, the idea of anyone ever having to go through that alone and not having the support they need. I also work for a company that does give us ill time and vacation time, and just recently I had the privilege of being with my mom and giving her care at the end of her life. And the difference was just remarkable. But during that time, I also used all my ill and vacation time. I would not change that for anything. But the fear that now I have is I have a year almost to go where I no longer have any ill or vacation. And because of the health problems I have from the accident, I could very well end up where I was before with not fear. So I'm wanting you to pass this bill because it will improve the life of working people in Oregon. I want other people to have what I did not have, but what my mom was able to have. The ability of their loved ones to be with them in crisis and also to be with them at the end of life and at the beginning of life. Thank you for listening to my story, and thanks for the opportunity to sharing my views.
Very much. Thank you very much for being here today. I'm going to go back, and if Kathy Kaufman is still here, and John Mullen, and I think, is Jerry Morris still here? No, it looks like he had to leave. Okay, so we have room for one more person up here, so how about, is Jim Davis here? Yes, please come forward.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, John Mullen, I'm here as co-chair of the Human Services Coalition of Oregon. Kathy Kaufman had to leave a little earlier. She sends her regrets, but strong support for Senate Bill 966. I'm not going to read the testimony at all. I know you have more witnesses. I just will be very brief in saying that the Human Services Coalition has been around since the 1980s, and we have about 80 members, both organizational and individual members. And I would just point out that it's rare for us to take positions on bills. We follow tax and revenue and budget issues and occasionally take positions on overarching bills that we think have a real importance for the state of Oregon. And so it was with great pleasure that we had a unanimous vote of the Human Services Coalition on Monday to support Senate Bill 966. So we're very pleased to have the opportunity to support it. And I'll add one very brief personal note. In my previous work of being director of Clackamas County Social Services, working with elderly people with disabilities and low-income people, we launched a caregiver program. I noted at the time that we're all born into this world helpless, and we need somebody to care for us. And at the end of our lives, we're oftentimes looking up into the face of a caregiver. And I hope that by passing this landmark legislation, we'll give families the opportunity to be there in the times that count. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jim Davis, representing the Oregon State Council for Retired Citizens, United Seniors of Oregon, Save Oregon Seniors, and the Oregon Alliance for Retired Americans. We are here to express our strong support for 966. And before I begin, I want to also share our appreciation and thanks for the exemplary work of Chair Rosenbaum on this very, very critical issue to us. So we thank you for that. This is a major, major issue in the senior and disability community, especially now with the baby boomers coming down the pike in the way that they are. Not only are they faced with dealing with surviving parents, but also their own aging process, and I will get to that point in a minute, but it is a major one. Right now, about one-fourth of the households are involved in caregiving, and one-third of them have more than one individual that they're caring for. So we're all involved. I know I have many family members that I've been involved in some caregiving with, and I think we all could look at that and say the same. We don't always know when it's going to happen. It's kind of hard to prepare, and sometimes it hits families very, very hard in terms of jobs, in terms of the time they're putting in, a lack of resources, lack of training, and of course now with a service network that is being devastated by cuts, it becomes very, very difficult in terms of caregiving. Caregivers are the backbone of our long-term care system. It's one of life's most compassionate, rewarding, and intimate acts, yet it's also one of the most undervalued and disrespected in many, many ways. And despite the amazing personal, professional, and economic sacrifices these caregivers are making, there remains few financial incentives, no tax breaks, and very dwindling support system that they are faced with. And so going back to a major point that is on our mind in terms of looking at caregiving in the United States, and over 50 million are involved in that, and 9 million seniors are going to need long-term care, and there's just a lot of difficulties that caregivers are facing and are struggling with. So we ask the question, so what happens when our senior and disability populations double? Are we really truly going to be prepared as a society to really provide caregiving for the boomer population, let alone provide caregiving today? So this bill provides at least some support mechanism to allow that to happen, because it's a pretty frightening thought about where caregiving is going to be in the next 20 years without some support coming in. And there's a real catch-22. As the economy worsens, more people are unemployed and need services, yet services are being cut, and families are going to have to take on that responsibility. So there's actually going to be more family caregiving that's going to be needed. And so we are saying that we must rededicate ourselves to family caregivers, and Senate Bill 966 is a good way to start that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you both for your testimony. And we're getting down to our last few witnesses. I really want to thank the committee members for hanging in here. Sybil Hebb, is Dana Hepper here? Looks like she had to leave. Alice Bartelt?
Oh, she's here.
Oh. Is Dana here?
No. Sybil.
Sybil's here. Alice Bartelt and Marcia Kelly.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, Sybil Hebb with the Oregon Law Center here today in support of Senate Bill 966. Very much appreciate the attention of the committee to this important issue and the leadership of the chair in bringing this discussion forward. As you know, the Law Center represents low-income people throughout the state of Oregon. Increasingly in recent years, our clients, though they are at a certain percentage of the federal poverty level, are also working. And for our clients, unfortunately, they are unable to afford taking advantage of Oregon's current family leave structure. The family leave structure is centered around the important principle that when a family member is critically ill or there is a newborn family, a newborn member of the family, there is important time that can never be regained. And if an employee is not allowed or not able to take time to be with that family member and to care for them during that time of immense importance, it's a significant sort of human dignity and human experience loss. So we're very supportive of Senate Bill 966 in making affordable and accessible Oregon's currently family leave protection. So thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, my name is Alice Bartelt, and today I'm representing the League of Women Voters. And I don't want to take much time. You've got my written testimony, but we supported this bill last session, and we would urge you to support it again this session, because it's good for families and good for the citizens of the state. Thank you.
Thank you.
Marcia Kelly, American Association of University Women of Oregon, with members across the state, Baker, Bend, Ashland. I'm here to... As a member of AUW, we have a national policy on paid family leave, but I think I'm going to take my time to talk from the standpoint of a former business owner, a managing partner, who actually completed the combined payroll. And I would like to refute the heavy administrative burden that would be on businesses. This is a 2 cent per hour. On the combined payroll, you already have to combine the numbers of hours that you've paid your employees within the time frame that you have to send in that report. So it's one more calculation, just taking the number of hours and timesing that by 2 cents. Most computer programs that people use for small businesses automatically update according to state law. So if you're using something like QuickBooks, they would automatically update it so that it would automatically calculate out of your staff's paychecks. I used those myself for 10 years. I had a small business, and as a small business owner, I would opt into this program for the benefits that it would give. I had a staff person who took time off unpaid because we couldn't afford to pay family leave to take care of her teenage daughter who was diagnosed with melanoma. We coped in an office with four people for unexpected times in paid family leave. And I think that many small businesses can do that if they think through the way that they do their work and if they involve their employees in those decisions. Again, this is a good bill. The American Association of University Women of Oregon, with our 2,000 members, want this bill passed for the citizens of Oregon. You've heard all of the other arguments.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
And thank you all. I have Sally Glazier. Sally, are you still here? It looks like she had to leave. And Erica, I don't have a last name, from the social workers, no. And Chandra or Chanda Stone, she's here. Great. And that, then it looks like we just have two more people, and that is Reagan Gray and Andrea Peluso.
No, you have one more that didn't get.
And do we have, I'm sorry, I don't know, maybe I missed you, so please.
Paul Olson from the Advocacy Coalition. I believe I was, somebody signed me up. So.
Great, well please come forward and we'll take your testimony.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll go ahead and get started. My name is Shanda Stone. I am the president of Nursing Mothers Council of Oregon, so you can probably guess how we support this bill. I have my testimony submitted, but basically we support this because it will help to establish breastfeeding with the mother and the baby. The mother-baby dyad is something that is very, very precious to us. In order to establish breastfeeding, in order to establish a milk supply, having that time at home with the baby then enables the mother to go back to work and to, then to be able to do the pumping that we've previously, of course, passed law that permits her to do that when she re-enters the workforce. So then she can continue to breastfeed even though she's returned to work. So we support this bill for that fact, and also I'm a mother of two, and so while I wouldn't be using it for maternity leave anymore, of course I've got my aging parents and my in-laws, and so I can see clearly that I could use this in the future. Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, my name is Andrea Peluso, and I am a resident of Portland. I'm a mother of two, and I'm the spokesperson for the grassroots volunteer-run group called Parents for Paid Leave. This is a group that came together basically because we were frustrated that in 2007 this paid family leave bill did not pass. This group has grown over the course of the last year to have about 1,100 members throughout the state, and all of those members believe very strongly that our state, that parents, that those people sandwiched between caring for children and their parents need paid family leave insurance. I've heard countless stories over the last year, as you have today, of families struggling to meet the demands of work and family. And I think it's become clear through the course of this hearing, but through the course of receiving some of those stories, that the policies that we currently have lag behind what families really need and the reality in which they currently live. We know that nearly 78% of people who needed paid family, who needed access to FMLA, didn't take their time off because it was unpaid and they couldn't afford to. We know that 51% of all private sector employees do not get a single paid sick day through their jobs, and that 3/4 of those of low-income workers don't get paid sick days through their jobs. There's clearly a need for paid family leave, and there, as we've heard today, there's a growing sandwich generation. There's a growing population of people who require care, and I have in my testimony some statistics about that, but I think we often have heard the argument that parents should be planning ahead for time off, and I would argue that parents do, but that life happens anyway, as you've heard today. I would like to argue that the state should be doing some planning too. We've seen that the population requiring care is growing, but the population able to provide care is not. Relying on sources outside the family to provide care is both costly to the healthcare system and to the social welfare systems. With an aging workforce, the reality for the majority of workers is that they will be struggling to balance work and family soon if they're not already. As a state, we should be thinking of elegant ways to solve this impending care crisis, and I believe that Senate Bill 966 is that. I guess I'd like to close, because I don't want to go on too much longer, by thanking all of you for your work and support on this, potential support on this, but also for thanking all of those parents who came today and to testify to support this, who've been conducting a sort of silent symphony while this hearing has been going on, of bringing babies in and out of this room, and to say that I also heard from dozens of other parents that wanted to be here today that could not be here, and I want to speak for a moment to the challenge of parents engaging in this legislative process. And I think it's challenging to get your kids to Salem at nap time, at the time when kids need to be picked up from school, in the middle of a work day. And I want you to know that for every parent and child that was here today, there are dozens more that weren't here today that wanted to come and tell you their stories, but couldn't because they're already sandwiched between trying to balance work and family. So I thank you again for your time and for those folks who came today.
Thank you for your comments. And Bill, please go ahead.
Yes, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, my name is Bill Olson. I'm the co-chair of the Advocacy Coalition of Seniors and People with Disabilities. We're here to speak in support of SB 966. I've submitted written testimony, and I won't go over that, except for one excerpt that I would like to quote in a moment. I will say that I have had personal experience with the family caregiving situation. My son, who was 21 at the time, suffered a brain injury, and suddenly, of course, in 1983. As you might guess from looking at me, I'm of a generation that where one salary or one paycheck sufficed to support the family and my wife could remain home. She was the caregiver, in essence, and remained so for many years. But it was still very stressful. And I have just enough imagination, I think, to understand how much more stressful it must be when both family members are working and then a crisis like that occurs and somebody has to make the choices that you've heard eloquently described, and I won't say it again. I just wanted to make one other point. You've heard the testimony of Jim Davis, for example, I think talking about the importance of supporting family caregivers, and that's a priority of the Advocacy Coalition as well. It's certainly one of mine. And I just wanted to quote a little bit from my letter. Family caregivers are a critically important yet undervalued component of our health and long-term care systems. You know that they provide most of the care because our public program simply can't stretch that far. And their economic value alone has been estimated at over $200 billion a year to the whole economy. That's nationally. I didn't try to break it out for Oregon. But we need to provide all the supports that we're able to provide, not only paid family leave, which we're talking about here, but respite care, information, assistance in finding those resources that can help their family member when they have that, when that crisis occurs. So with that, I'll close and thank you very much for the opportunity to testify, and I appreciate your being here all through this hearing.
Thank you, and thank you all for your comments and for waiting so patiently. And, yes, Senator Przanski?
Madam Chair, I'm assuming that if those who weren't able to make it here, we do have the record that would be open so people could email to us.
Absolutely.
We've asked some folks to both call and email. So
just want to make sure you knew that there's others that weren't able to get here. We know that the schedules are tight for many people, just as it is for the schedule they give us.
Right. Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you all. Reagan? No. Okay, well, then that completes our witness list. So, once again, I want to thank the members of the audience who stuck it out and those who couldn't, and the committee members. Yes, Senator Przanski.
I believe there may be someone else that might want to give testimony. At least someone started to stand up. I don't know.
Oh, is there someone else in the audience that does want to testify on this bill? No. Okay. just an enthusiastic listener. Okay, well, clearly there is a lot of interest in this bill. Once again, I want to thank everybody who came today and told their stories, and also especially my committee members for hanging in here and the staff. So with nothing further to come before us today, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 966. And members, we are adjourned.
That's going to be a tough one.